Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good middle of the night, wherever you may find yourself around the world. Welcome to this very special 25th episode of DevelopPod. And Tanya and James are both here in the virtual studio today. Tanya, what are we looking at today?
Well, happy to be here again with you guys. So, yes, thank you, Christian. And since we have reached this milestone, we thought we would pause and reflect and take a moment thinking about our own career trajectories, as well as how things have developed with TD SIG. And how we thought about doing this is asking people to let us know how they started in the career of English language teaching, maybe one of the high points, maybe a low point in their career, and also where they are now. James, would you like to introduce our first speaker?
Absolutely. So we've invited various members of the TD SIG committee to reflect back on their careers. So it makes sense. We think, let's start with our boss. Tyson Seaburn is our coordinator. And so here he is reflecting back on his life in English language teaching.
I came into ELT a little bit by accident. I always wanted to be a teacher, but I didn't really know how I was going to get there and that I would take a non-traditional path really to get there. But after I finished university, my undergrad in philosophy, then I started teaching at a computer programming desktop publishing type of private language school. And that really wasn't working for me. So I had a kind of on and off girlfriend who went to Korea and she was teaching English there. And so she convinced me by snail mail, actually, to give it a shot. And so a year after she went there, I followed. A high point in my career pretty much, I think, has been just the last decade, really, because over that time period, a lot of things have happened, and a lot of good things really have happened. Primarily, I started using Twitter a little bit longer than that ago, and through there, I met almost everybody that I work with now. I became part of the sort of IATEFL community, the PLN, quote-unquote. And that's led to a lot of different opportunities that I probably wouldn't have had otherwise. As far as a low point in my career goes, I would say that probably came maybe 2 or 3 years ago. Now, I know it sounds like I'm contradicting myself in terms of the best years, but those best years were a lot of work, and I pretty much lived and breathed ELT for a long time. And a couple of years ago, I was really reaching my breaking point, and that was really a scary feeling. It was not a good time, and I really needed to recognize that I was overworking and I was really causing some problems to my mental health. And so I would say that was a low point in one way, because I really didn't feel good, but at the same time, it was a turning point for me as well. Right now, in the middle of this pandemic, I'm working from home. I've been at the University of Toronto in an EAP program for pretty much the last decade as well, which has been very wonderful. It has been stable, and it's something I'm very grateful for. And it has afforded me a lot of the opportunities that I have. As far as where I'm going, I don't really know. I think I'll just continue on this path for as long as I feel like I'm going to get something from it and feel happy.
So listening to Tyson's story was very familiar to me, because, you know, my career path was remarkably similar in a lot of ways, in the sense that I also went to South Korea to teach. And I also became part of that Twitter and online PLN, professional learning network that Tyson mentioned. It was really a just like for him, I know it's a huge thing in my career. I was so lucky, so blessed that I just sort of discovered this really by chance at exactly the moment when lots of other people were discovering it as well. And I cannot tell you how huge it was, the role that finding all those people and then discovering IATEFL and going to the conferences and having an existing network of people. The first time I ever went to IATEFL, you know, like I went there alone, and then I left with just so many new friends and colleagues. It really was like a special thing that I'm sure will never happen again. The serendipity of it was wonderful. So I really identified with Tyson on that. Tanya, did you identify as well with some of what Tyson was talking about?
Yeah, definitely that kind of that non-traditional path into the career. Like Tyson, I graduated not in philosophy, but in psychology and in English lit. And I just had this feeling, this kind of fractious feeling of just wanting to expand my horizons and get out of Canada. And so I didn't go to South Korea. I went to Taiwan. And that's where my kind of world opened up. I also had always felt that I wanted to be a teacher, but I just wasn't sure how I wanted to do that. And I wasn't keen on jumping straight into teacher's college after university. So going straight to Taiwan was my initiation.
And did you identify with anything Tyson said in terms of his low point, perhaps being overworked?
Yeah, I did. It's interesting. I feel, from what I understood, that some of Tyson's feelings of being very overwhelmed were maybe due to kind of that enthusiastic yesing to lots of projects. And so my feelings, my low point was definitely, I would say, very much in the category of being very overwhelmed, overburdened, overworked. But I would say it was more from external factors. I was given a lot of responsibility at a school, a private language school that I was working at in Toronto. And the job just kind of morphed into larger and larger roles within the organization. And although I had repeatedly said to the management that I was really starting to feel like I was failing at these jobs and it was too much, those kind of requests for help and assistance were kind of ignored. And I ended up having to quit. I had to quit that position, which I loved. And I actually quit teaching. I went right out of the classroom. I was so burnt out, so tired. And the thing I think is funny, though, to add insult to injury, the person who took over from my role did the job for about 3 months, went into the owner of the school and said, "This is an impossible job. Nobody can do this job. I want a third of the work and I want a 20% salary increase." And he got it. I couldn't believe it. But yeah, so it took me a while to feel like I needed to get back into the classroom, and eventually I did. But that was a low point, actually quitting teaching and quitting a job that I'd really enjoyed. But I felt I had no other recourse at that time.
Listening to Tyson personally, I identified with, I'm not sure it was exactly the words he used, but falling into ELT by accident. And yeah, my first degree was in hotel and catering management, and I hadn't thought about teaching until a friend recommended it. And it was a way out, to be honest, of an industry which I didn't really enjoy. And then I found myself in teaching, which I absolutely love. So I'm glad that Tyson is an accidental ELTer. I'm sure he wouldn't describe himself as that. So let me use those words. But many of us find ourselves in ELT, I think, because of that. Yeah, all turned good. So next we're going to hear from Adam, another member of the committee, who has a somewhat similar tale in terms of his initiation into the ELT industry. Adam works on our e-zine online newsletter, TD Link Up, and also on our website.
Well, hello everyone, and I hope you're enjoying this 25th episode of the Develop Pod. So after nearly 20 years of doing this, what I can tell you for certain is that it's a constant roller coaster ride of a journey. So, how did I fall into it? I think fall into is probably the best way to describe my relationship with ELT. Went to visit my girlfriend of the time, wife as she is now, in Turkey, and thought, well, I quite like it here. I'd like to stay for a while. So I did the CELTA, and within an hour of finishing the CELTA, I managed to land a job in a university. So the stumble ass backwards method is how I would best describe it. Pretty lucky, to be honest. But yeah, things aren't like that now in Turkey, but at the time, yeah, pretty easy to get a job. So a high point in my career. Well, let me think. About 10 years or so ago, must have been, there was an explosion on social media in the world of ELT, and a lot of us from around the world got together. It kind of started off on Twitter and then slowly migrated over to Facebook. But it was just a great time because I met a lot of new people all around the world, made some good friends, and a community just came together And it's pretty much stayed together ever since, to be honest. And that was a really big influence on my career. It opened up new ideas, new possibilities to me. And a lot of good things came from that. Now, I mentioned that roller coaster, didn't I? Well, on the downside, if I think back on it, perhaps a low point for me would be coming to the realization that not everybody's going to like you and you're not going to like everybody in this profession. And that can be a bit tricky when the person in question is someone you have to work with closely or they're in a managerial position. And, well, I think the best thing to do is consider your job, what's important to you. Don't let it affect you too negatively if you're in that situation. And focus on your teaching and your professional development. And that's how I got through it. Didn't let it bother me too much. And didn't think, well, this is all my fault. Okay, there are two sides to everything, and you get on with it best you can and come out the other end. So, where am I right now? Well, after 15 or so years in Turkey teaching, well, it's nearly 20 actually, I'm now in the Netherlands, and I'm in a fortunate position to be able to support myself financially without having a full-time paying job, which is given me the luxury of doing some volunteer teaching with immigrants and refugees, and it's extremely rewarding. So that's my roller coaster career.
So Adam is another person like Tyson and I who had that experience with the online world. And it's true that Adam and Tyson were both people that I got to know through Twitter, like he just described. Christian, what about for you? Did you identify with perhaps his more negative experience there, dealing with people you don't necessarily get on with or trouble with management?
How did you guess that? I think perhaps all of us have experienced that sometime or other, right? And yeah, there's a couple of times within the same position, actually, that I felt very bullied by a boss. And I really had to be very firm and put down my boundaries. And actually, on one occasion, when the aforementioned manager was about to be promoted and be made my line manager, I actually said, I will not continue in this job with this person as my line manager because I have felt bullied in the past. So if I have any advice, I suppose, is, you know, set your boundaries. If you're in such a position, it's difficult. It's a tricky one. I don't have the experience in terms of, I've never been part of the Twitterati, as it were. I've always been a reluctant participant in Twitter, although I do. But I do identify with the teaching in Turkey, actually. That was my first teaching job abroad. And although I wouldn't say it was my high point, in terms of teaching, I absolutely loved it. I was teaching young learners particularly and really felt in my element that, you know, I could do something really well. However, it was also a low point in my career in some ways, in that I had a somewhat sociopathic, you might even say psychopathic boss. And that boss had employed about 15 new teachers that very year I started and kept putting his foot in it, saying things like, if any of the teachers try to leave, I will have my friends at customs arrest you. And also, I remember him saying, if anyone is thinking about leaving, you know I have a gun in the safe. So people were literally, really.
That's crazy.
And I remember people left literally in the depths of the night by stealth because they were so afraid. They were so afraid of confronting him. And for better or worse, being quite direct, I decided I would approach him and tell him exactly why I was leaving. Politely, but and as diplomatically as I could, but nonetheless in a very direct fashion. And I sat down with him and his wife and said, I'm leaving because I don't feel secure here. You've said X, Y, and Z. And he started having a go at me. And his wife, who happened to be English, turned to him rather than me and said, I told you, you always said the wrong thing. No wonder we're losing teachers. And after feeling quite defensive myself and worried about how I was going to be received, I just left them to it to patch up their marital difficulties, presumably. And I did a sharp exit, which was just a thing. And I moved jobs.
There you go. And I can't say I've ever had a gun involved in any of my teaching experiences. So you've got one there, I'll tell you.
It's quite dramatic. Yeah. I never saw the gun. Yeah. I never saw the gun, thank God. Yeah. But yeah, definitely initiation into the ELT industry.
Yeah.
Well, let's now hear from Ceci. Ceci is also on our committee, and she works on our TDAJ, which is our academic journal.
How did I come into EOT? I suppose my love for the language. I started studying when I was four or five, and I was fairly fluent by the time I was 13. And after I had an exchange student program experience and I came back to Brazil, the owner of the school where I had studied invited me to teach. And soon I found out that I loved not only the language, but helping others learn it. Well, currently I'm an academic manager for Richmond in Brazil. That means that I am in charge of the team of academic advisors for Richmond in Brazil. And we promote teacher development and teacher training and giving support to teachers to adopt our books and programs. And I love what I'm doing. Well, I guess a low point in my ELT career was about 8 years ago or so, when I'd been in it for 20 years, 18 years or so. And I was overworked. I worked very long hours and I got very little money. And I was just really, really at a point where I was losing the joy in it. I loved being in the classroom, but all the work and meetings and obligations. And I had a sense as if I weren't moving forward, as if I hadn't progressed in my career. And I was very demotivated at the time, and I actually considered quitting it. It's hard to choose a high point in my ELT career. I suppose the first time I presented at IATEFL was one of them, and getting good feedback. The first time I was on the SIG showcase for TDSIG, even before I joined TDSIG, that was a high point as well. I was part of a project in China with Simon Greenall as my editor. That was a huge high point as well. So many high points. The first plenary, I don't know. I was very fortunate, very lucky throughout my ELT career, and I still am, I suppose.
Well, what I find really interesting about what Ceci's just said is these high points of her career seem very much connected to her reaching beyond and taking on new opportunities and new challenges. And I think that's very important, because we often get very afraid to present at conferences for the first time. And we're nervous about joining new communities or committees and that type of thing. And that's very reflective of me, of course, in that those have been my high points as well, where I have really, in my own mind, felt like I took on a real challenge, like really pushed myself out of my comfort zone and dealt with that, oh my goodness, is this going to work? Is this, oh, what have I done? And then actually really, enjoyed the experience and looking back, thinking, wow, what a great decision that was.
Like when you became a podcaster, for example.
Yes, exactly. Another learning curve. What about you, Christian? Was there something that kind of took your interest?
Yeah, in many ways, I suppose. But in as much as she said it was a high point delivering for the first time at IATEFL, I would say that was the low point for me. And I'm not sure that I ever want to do it again, quite frankly. Never say never, but no.
I'm really sure you will.
Despite doing this podcast, I'm not a public speaker in front of tens or hundreds of people. And I find it really petrifying. Delivering in front of hundreds of people, actually, I find it difficult to let go of the need to deliver a perfect presentation.
Yeah,
it's funny because when I was listening to Ceci there, I identified with that as well, because my first presentation at IATEFL was a real highlight, because I'd been going for years, but I was working on my game, if you like, as a presenter, and I didn't feel ready. So when I did do it, and I ended up having a room which was much bigger than I was anticipating, and it was pretty much full, and it just went perfectly. It was just one of those things where it just went really well as a presentation, and the response afterwards was great. And You know, I am naturally an introverted person, but I love doing presentations. So, and it was in my hometown of Brighton. There, I totally identify with that. One thing I did think was interesting that she talked about that was different from everything we've heard so far was her kind of her route into the profession was as someone who's learned English as a foreign language. Yeah. She's, you know, that thing that none of us mentioned, which was that sort of passion for the language and feeling that connection to it and then wanting to engage in that. And I think that's true for probably the vast majority of teachers out there, actually, including the people listening to this. They're more likely to identify with that story of learning the language and then, you know, feeling like a natural transition to then say, I'm really, really interested in this language. And now I can use my skills to become a teacher. So
it's interesting because it's similar but different to Irene's story. So why don't we listen to Irene next and see how she compares? Irene works with scholarships and social media.
How did I come into ELT? Well, I remember that when I was 7 years old, I started going to private English lessons. And I was really motivated with the language, with the lessons. And so I used to save some money monthly and to buy English books to play with them, teaching some imaginary students of mine. Later on, I went to university and I graduated as a lawyer, but I decided or I felt that my true calling was teaching, and teaching English as a foreign language. So I turned into that, and I also graduated. I then went to England and did some other courses and some other diplomas there. And some high points in my career. Well, one was that, going to England and to learn so much, not only about the language, but also the culture. Then becoming the director of studies in the school that I'm working nowadays, helping new teachers to develop in their own careers, helping them with their lessons, with their planning, discussing about new methodology. That's really important and satisfying. Also, getting the scholarship from TDC, becoming an IATFL member and getting the scholarship last year, and also becoming later on a member of TDC. Low point in my career, I think that teaching privately. I started as a private teacher and then I worked in several schools, both public and private, but teaching privately has not been that successful. And there was a point that I thought about quitting teaching, by the way. But then I started working in different schools locally, so I got motivated once again. But I definitely quit teaching privately. And I hope that there are many other things to discover and many other areas to go into. For example, nowadays I'm undergoing a course into technology and teaching with technology that is really important in the times that we are living and we are going through.
Well, I guess I can identify with Irene in a number of ways there, particularly in terms of having a high point as a director of studies. I helped to begin a language school and went from ADOS to director of studies to academic manager. And it really helped me learn a whole heap of new skills, actually. Also, in terms of becoming a member of the TDSIG, I think that was a high point for me. I think I came here by chance.
Well, for all of us, naturally.
Of course. But I've spoken to so many interesting people and done so many different interesting interviews that I've learned so much. It's been a real honor. I don't say that lightly. I also thought it was really interesting that Irene said she had some imaginary friends that she would teach. I really like that idea.
Yeah, I definitely don't think we'll hear a more adorable story than that on today's episode. Did you, Tanya?
Well, maybe, because I really identified with that.
Go on then.
Because as a child, I used to line up all of my stuffed animals from about the age of about 4. And I would get out little pieces of paper and pens and put that in front of all of my stuffed teddies and ducks or whatever I had. And I would have classes. I would teach in the basement.
It sounds like you were giving them tests.
Well, no, I was very patient with my teddies. You know, no, just okay. Oh, I see you not adding this up, or this is the right word, or whatever it was. So from a very early age, I was actually teaching my stuffed animals regularly.
And yeah. Bless you, was it for want of having any real friends, Tanya?
Yes. You know, I think it was because I was the youngest in the family and my older brother and sister really wanted nothing to do with me.
So let's listen to another one. This is Serkan, who also works with the TDHA and with TD LinkUp.
Hello, this is Serkan from TDSake, and thank you to the developer team as this recording helped me to actually reflect on my career so far. The starting point of my career was, I think, my high school years. I decided to become an English teacher when I was at high school. This was kind of a must because in Turkey, you have to actually decide which department you'll be studying at university when you are at high school, because this makes actually some changes on the courses that you take. So this was the time I decided to become an English teacher. And then I studied English language teaching in my BA and MA. And I started teaching. I think the highest point in my career was my MA year, because it was a kind of practical MA. In 1 year, maybe almost like 50 of my classes were observed and I was given feedback on each and every of them. So that helped me learn a lot in this process. The lowest point of my career, I think there was a time that I stopped teaching and started to work in an advertisement agency. So that was definitely a kind of break. And it maybe affected me. It actually kept me a little bit away from ELT for some time. So in that way, it was the lowest point, I suppose. But I think we all learn a lot when we are away from something. So when I came back to ELT after 4 years, I was actually happier, and I knew that teaching was what I wanted to do. Now I'm actually at home because of COVID-19, trying to manage emergency remote instruction. And in the years to come, I am planning actually to continue this job as long as I enjoy it, because I really believe there's always something to learn in this job, and especially with this remote instruction. Now there are lots of things that I need to learn and I want to learn. So I think that's the way I will continue. Thank you.
Interesting. Well, like Irene and Serkan, one highlight for me, it really speaks to me what they were talking about, was the training I received. This kind of excitement, this initiation into the industry that I felt when I took the CELTA and DELTA courses in the UK. Those programs, those courses made me feel excited in a way I'd never experienced before. And it was as if I was really finding my true calling. So those were definitely high points for me as well. But I'm actually quite happy to say that probably the highest point in my career is actually right now, even amongst the challenges that I'm facing, like everybody else is, with the learning how to teach online and the COVID restrictions and everything. I I feel very grateful. I have found myself in a position at a post-secondary institute, settled. It's a secure position. I have awesome colleagues who are very supportive, friendly, encouraging. I really like my manager, who seems to really believe in me, respect me. So I find that, considering that I've also been in the industry for about 30 years, really the last, I would say, 3, 4, 5 years have been the best for me. And I'm very happy to have found myself in a place where I am and being able to participate in volunteer organizations, having that luxury in my time as well. I love being a part of TDSIG.
That's nice to hear that, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree, Tanya. Although I'm not in such a secure position these days, in terms of where I'm at the moment, personally, I wouldn't say it's necessarily a high point, but I'm taking a bit of a breather and a rest because I haven't got work because of COVID. That said, I'm freelance again, so that's something of a luxury. I can identify with Serkan in another respect, and that's in doing my MA in TESOL. That was a real high point for me. And in many ways, it wasn't the practical course that Serkan experienced, but I made it extremely practical because I applied all of the ideas. And so I found it much, much, much more useful and experiential in some ways than my diploma. And also it led on to another high point in my career, becoming a pedagogy manager at the Foreign and Commonwealth Office, which was a real privilege to be working with modern foreign language teachers and observing in every language from Azeri to Zulu, potentially. Just fascinating how the principles of VLT cross over into MFL, modern foreign languages, as well.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more. I kind of neglected to also say that a huge high point, which has kind of led me to where I am now, was becoming a CELTA trainer and moving into teacher education, and just how rewarding it is to actually then be participating in other people's journeys of and instilling that same enthusiasm and inspiration that I felt on my teacher training programs is just wonderful.
Completely. I wholeheartedly agree with that. It's a real privilege to be part of other people's learning journeys. And two things I'd like to mention connected to teacher education work. First of all, it was really the moment I truly understood teaching to its core when I became a CELTA trainer. That old adage of you learn by teaching, I think, is very much true for me. And secondly, that just recently I took part in my first online CELTA course as a teacher trainer. And it was only then I realized that, in fact, a greater form of collaboration and communication and camaraderie was actually possible online than on a face-to-face course. And that was quite a revelation to me.
I wanted to comment on something I think we haven't heard today, which actually kind of surprised me a bit. But I think actually for most people, it would be part of it. When I thought about the highs and lows of my career, I really thought about things that actually happened in the classroom while I was teaching, you know, like not just sort of big career stuff, like actual moments with students face to face. I mean, when I think about, I mean, even silly things, like one of my favorite memories from being in the classroom was when, I don't know if it's ever happened to you, but where you get some of your students get a bit enthusiastic when they're doing a listening activity. And then they sort of, while they're doing the listening, they don't just do exercise B, but they also do exercise C at the same time. Right. And I know genuinely spontaneously said to my students, I said to them, okay, so take your time, right? Don't rush. And remember that 2B and not 2C, that is the question.
Is this James, can I ask, was this the greatest joke of your career?
Yeah. Without question, it wasn't just the greatest joke of my career. It was the greatest moment. I was doing internal cartwheels. And I think just one of my students gave me a little look like,
nice one, James.
And and that was still the highlight, I think. But just those silly moments, they actually are really meaningful moments. I mean, and I would say that the lowest point of my career as well was actually a situation where I had a student who I'd prepared this task. I presented to the students, and one of the students who was actually an English teacher, they all were, all my students there, just looked at me and said, "I'm not doing this." And she just said, "I'm not doing it." And all the other students were like, "Ooh, this is really embarrassing," and she was really, really rude about it, you know.
What? And why didn't she want to do it? Or can't you remember?
Yeah.
I don't really know. I mean, whenever something like this happens, your instinct is to react to what you've done wrong, right? Like you sort of think like, "Oh God, what have I done? What could I have done differently?"
Yes.
And actually, I think it was as much about her and what was going on with her life as it was about me.
Sure.
And she wasn't an easy student at any time, but this was the worst moment. And yes. then actually a week after this, we had to have one-to-one feedback sessions with each student. I mean, it was just soul-crushingly embarrassing. And she was incredibly apologetic and ashamed thing. It just, the whole thing was really tough. It was a difficult experience. But then what I really learned from it was that it forced me to reflect. And, you know, the funny thing about it was that she was right. The activity was terrible. It was badly designed. It was poorly executed. And, you know, and I needed that experience to become better. That said, she should have gone about it in a different way, you know.
Yeah, but, absolutely.
But I learned a lot. Yeah. But, you know, like, it's those things that happen in the classroom, for good or for bad. Those are the things that I really, that I think about most when I think about my highs and lows.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, the classroom is just such an intersection of cultural awareness growth, personal issues, your own creative ideas. Everything
just
is coming
interacting
together.
With other people. I mean, that's essentially what is the crux of what we do as teachers, right? It's whether you're teaching or teacher training, it's that interaction with other people that makes it what it is.
Yeah, without that, sometimes it's a beautiful moment. It's an absolute oil painting of experience. Yeah. And other times it goes off the rails and it all falls apart. And all we can do is you walk out of the classroom and scratch your head and think, well, how can I learn from that experience? What can I take away from this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I've really enjoyed this this episode where we've reflected and we've looked back on our careers. And so I think also now is an opportunity to reflect and look back on TDSIG's own journey since when it was created. So I had a chat with coordinator Tyson Seaburn, and we spoke about the history of TDSIG. So I'm joined now by our coordinator, Tyson Seaburn. Hi, Tyson.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. So we thought we'd bring you here today because in this episode we're reflecting back on our history as teachers. Well, we thought, why don't we do a brief reflection as well on the history of TDSIG? So I know that obviously you weren't there at the beginning when everything started, but could you tell us a bit about what you do know about the beginnings of TDSIG?
Sure. I mean, I know that Adrian Underhill was a key figure in the inception of TDSIG. It appears as though there's some discussion about who was the first SIG at IATEPL. Yeah. That tends to be a little bit of a competition, I think, between PRONSIG, for example, teacher education or teacher training and education, and us. But I think what I've gathered from looking at the newsletters and things like that from the past is that it wasn't really a kind of jump in and we were formally starting a SIG all at once. It was sort of a group of people that were coming together around sort of a central issue, and that issue was teacher education to some degree. And they sort of created a little community, and that grew into what was TDSIG at the time. But I don't for certain really know if it was called TDSIG in 1985 or 86, or if it was teacher education. But eventually we morphed into TDSIG and have gone through a number of, you know, excellent coordinators and team members and projects. And here we are today, 36 years later, something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Mm-hmm. This is the thing, is it, I guess we don't have the benefit of having a, like, launch day, you know.
No,
this is the day when it began. It sort of was this amorphous thing that seemed to sort of
exactly. It was
all over. And
I think happened was they had a kind of not a listserv, because digital things weren't really around then, but you know, sort of a mailing list of some sort, and they created a newsletter with sort of little articles or anecdotes of things that had happened to someone during their daily teaching lives. And then that came into an event of some sort where a bunch of people put on an event together in Berlin, I think, maybe. And then a newsletter created out of that. And, you know, none of us are old enough, frankly, to be able to say exactly what happened and when the officiality became a thing.
Yeah, it's shrouded in mystery, which is the way we like it.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll need to create an origin story, you know, make a sort of comic book origin story that can be rebooted from time to time.
Yeah. Okay. So let's move on. So in most episodes, we ask you to do a news update of on TD-SYNC, and since I've got you here, we may as well do that now together.
Yes.
So let's mainly focus, I think, today on the upcoming Web Carnival. So can you tell us, well, let's start by talking a bit about the theme. What's this year's Web Carnival about?
So we're focusing on race and queerness in ELT this year. And one of the reasons we decided to do that was because most of the time these topics may be talked about in one-offs here and there at different conferences or different events, but they tend to be a fringe relationship to the main conference theme. And so yeah. I thought it would be good in light of not only my own interests and passions, but also recent events, that we center this focus for an event and create a space where only we talk about race and how it impacts our, everybody in ELT and queerness, and how that impacts everybody in ELT.
So how can people get involved in this event?
Well, one of the ways, and the most traditional way, I think, that we've been encouraging involvement up to this point is through submitting a proposal to the live event that we're going to have on December 5th and 6th. That live event ends or caps off the Web Carnival, in fact. But it is a place where anybody, particularly who identifies in a racialized way or a queer way, can submit a proposal to give a talk at our conference, if you want to call it such a thing. But in addition to that, we don't want to have simply a sort of one-off event and then, you know, you kind of wipe your hands and you're done. Instead, Web Carnival's always been a place where we spend an entire month discussing as a community and trying to bring together a wide variety of platforms. And so another way to be involved is to keep an eye out for key questions that we're going to be tweeting out or putting onto social media. A call for small articles or blog posts or video posts related to these sort of key questions that we're going to be putting out throughout November.
And of course, we have our regular Twitter chat, the SYNC Tweet Meet. Can you give us an update on what we can expect coming soon from that?
Sure. In fact, I just tweeted out a little promo about it today, but TD-SYNC will be returning to moderating our SYNC Tweet Meet for 3 weeks, starting next week, October 27th, and it will be for 3 weeks. One of those weeks will be centered on the Web Carnival theme. So that will be obviously a place where we can gather some useful information. But the other 2 weeks are a little bit open still at the moment. And so we're collecting themes from anybody on social media or anyone who participates. And it'll be a surprise.
Okay. There's something to look forward to. Okay. Thanks a lot, Tyson. Nice to speak to you as always.
Same. Have a great episode.
Thanks.
Well, thanks everyone for listening. To get our next episode and make it magically appear on your device of choice, please remember to subscribe and follow TD-SYNC on social media. We are at Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. So we very much hope that you found this episode interesting and an opportunity to reflect on your own career journeys. Take care and see you next time.